Hello, everyone. It's Aldo Gandia of the Mike North Advantage. And today we're starting the show a little differently because a few hours ago we heard the terrible news of the passing of Gale Sayers. So Mike and I are going to share some thoughts and some recollections about the Kansas Comet. And then we'll begin the show as we traditionally do. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I mean, I knew Gale was sick. I knew he had dementia. The concussion people will start coming out now saying, see, I would just like to say, yeah, see, Gale Sayers basically had dementia like millions of Americans end up getting that didn't play in the NFL. So I want to put that aside and say this. Number one, no man ever influenced me more as a football player than Gale Sayers. I was 12 years old. Those are the influential years. You see a guy like that running the football and you've never seen anything like it before, it sticks with you forever. I also used to cut out all his pictures when I was 12, 13 and keep them in a box, which I have here today. I might take a picture later of one of them. Just out of magazine, Sport Magazine, which is now defunct, Sports Illustrated. Everything in 65 and 66 was Gale Sayers or Leroy Kelly, who was supposed to be the guy that was going to be the rival to Gale Sayers after Leroy Kelly became a hell of a running back when Jim Brown retired for the Cleveland Browns. So that's one memory. The other memory, I got to work side by side with first number 34, Gale Sayers, Walter Payton, who, to me, Walter was as a class individual, classy guy. And then right after that, I got to work with Gale Sayers, and I'll never forget, after Walter died, there was a meeting at the score. And they brought me in, and they asked me, who do you want to work with at Hooters? Because we did these Hooters shows. When I was with Walter, we worked at Vinny's in Schaumburg, and we worked at, I forget the name of the place, in Rosemont. But we worked at an Italian restaurant. It will come to me. And I said, I want to work with Gale. And they said, well, yeah, but he can't talk. I go, what do you mean he can't talk? Well, he's gruff and he stutters and everything else. I go, there's one major thing, because they had brought up maybe McMahon. They brought up other former Bears to work with me. And I nixed them all, because at the time I said, well, Jim McMahon was horrible on the radio. At the time, Jimmy's much better now, but he was horrible. I remember his days when he came on at WLS. He was just horrible, but he was Jim McMahon. Mm-hmm. I used the same tact with the score management. I told him straight out, it's Gale Sayers. There's no other guy that can replace Walter Payton with any ounce of objectivity than Gale Sayers. And that's how that worked, and it ended up being a great friendship. We became close friends. We were in passing before, but he knew how much I loved him, and he basically thought I brought him back from the abyss because he was very bitter. I see where you posted Bears Barroom with him and Walter embracing. Mm-hmm. That was very few, my friend, and people will deny it. I know it for a fact, okay? And it was more on Gale. Gale was bitter. Gale felt forgotten. Walter, I believe, who was a warm-hearted guy, always felt the coldness from Gale, and there was that rivalry there, but there was respect, absolute respect. So I got to work with the two maybe greatest running backs in the history of the league.
Yeah, I'd say that's nice on the resume there. That is pretty incredible.
I could have maybe worked with Jim Brown if I'm in Cleveland. I mean, if you worked with Jim Brown in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe you did a show with Leroy Kelly later, you know? But I can't think of a guy that was blessed more than me to be able to work with, I know for a fact, the two greatest Chicago Bear running backs in over their 100-year history. But I don't think you could work with two better football players as far as at the running back position. And they knew the game. They all knew the game, and both of them knew the game, and it was just a pleasure.
Yeah, and you've been following the Chicago Bears since the early 60s. I started in the late 60s, and so my recollection is that in 1967, it was really the first year that I can, as a young kid, kind of realize what is going on. And I'm looking at the newspapers. Gale Sayers does this. Gale Sayers does that. And all of a sudden, it starts to become inbred in me. Hey, we've got one of the finest, if not the best, running back in football history here with the Chicago Bears. And then I start following the team very closely in 1968. And then, oh, my God, in the game 9, he gets that injury. And he was on his way to a sensational season. People don't remember, but he was averaging over 6 yards a carry. He had almost 900 yards rushing in 9 games, and he was catching passes out of the backfield. He was Gale Sayers, but he was playing against the 49ers. He got hit in the knee, and all of a sudden...
Herman Alexander.
Yes, there you go. There you go.
Hit him low on the right side by the end zone. Gale Sayers basically averaged 6.2 yards a carry that year, which was just unbelievable when you know that they're all keying on the man.
Yes.
The guy gets hurt. Maybe he's out for 6 weeks like McCaffrey or maybe Saquon Barkley.
Right.
But it was a career-ending injury at the time, or so they thought. He had a friendship with Brian Piccolo, although I don't think it was as close as portrayed because he also told me that Pick was really good friends with Ralph Kurek, and so was Gale. So it was still a great friendship, and they pushed each other because they both had something to prove, and that's going to be accentuated. The movie accentuated their friendship. But coming back and averaging 4.2 yards a carry after a devastating knee injury back in the Neanderthal days and leading the league in rushing and running between the tackles, probably I think it's impressive as anything he ever did before. To come back from a knee injury that ended 80% of the running back's careers back then, if you got it, and he leads the league in rushing. That's greatness.
Yep. The numbers were 1,032 yards rushing, 4.4 average. And I remember I watched every game that season, and I remember how difficult it was for him. He had lost that sensational burst and cutting ability, and so he was making yards solely on effort. And it wasn't like he was surrounded by a great team. I think, if I remember correctly, that was a 1-13 team that he was rushing the ball for.
Well, you know what's funny, Alex? What to tell you how unbelievable it was, he still had cutting ability, but it was like a lot of running backs' cutting ability.
Yeah.
It was good enough to make one miss, but not good enough to make two miss.
Right.
He had a good enough moves to make three miss in his prime. So what he did there to me was absolutely phenomenal. They knew he was going to get the ball. He did it by will. And I think that proves his greatness more than anything, that he was asked to run with a different style, almost like a fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And his longest run that year was 26 yards.
Mm.
26 yards, folks. And that run, I remember it. That run, if he's healthy, is a 50-yarder for a touchdown.
Yeah.
He just couldn't get away.
He was really sensational. Yeah, and regarding his athletic ability, he did have that cutting ability that was really unlike anything that I've even seen since. And there are football players now who are great at cutting, but Sayers had this unbelievable low center of gravity. And then while his feet were like 6 feet apart, he was still able to make these incredible cuts. And then add to that his leaping ability. I've been posting highlights of certain plays throughout his career on Twitter at Bears Barroom, and he would hurt over tacklers in such a sensational way. It's really a sight to behold. I mean, even an ordinary play with Gale looks great because there was this grace about the way he ran the ball.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it and you see, even you're right, even when he was a grinder, he ran the ball with style.
Mm-hmm.
He held the ball like a loaf of bread, which was supposed to be a no-no. He would cup the ball with his hand at the top of the football, hold it by the laces, and then he tuck it when he thought he was going to get hit. He always told me, and he told other people, he ran scared, was afraid to get caught. So these were unusual missions because it was a manly game. But he said, I was afraid to get hit, and I didn't want to get hit. And that's why. And then he proved his toughness by, like I said, playing like a fullback type of position. With Brian Piccolo, by the way. They were basically two halfbacks. Piccolo was supposed to be the fullback, and he weighed up 205 pounds.
That's right.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, and it kind of speaks to the fact that they just didn't have a good fullback. So they put Piccolo in there because he was such a – he played with so much heart. He would do anything right. to get on the field.
Yeah, and I'll never forget this. I asked Gale two different things that really pissed him off. Okay. Well, one that really pissed him off, I said, what running backs were better than you? I said, was it Walter? Was it Marshall Faulk? Was it this guy or that guy? And all he said is, none of them could do what I did in the short amount of time. None of them. And he also said about Marshall Faulk, if Marshall Faulk left his house in Chicago's South Side and had a game at Wrigley Field in 10-degree weather, and I got to play in St. Louis and left my house and played indoors, I would have gained 2,000 yards in 14 games. Told me that straight up.
Yeah. Well, that is...
Lay me on a dry carpet. He used to get hot. Barry Sanders. Let him run in Tiger Stadium. Let him run in Wrigley Field on hard cement like mud. And let's see how many yards he gets. Period.
Yeah.
They all had the advantage of playing indoors, some of these running backs. And he would hear nothing of that. Play in the elements, then compare yourself to me.
And that was one of the great things about him. He had some of his most sensational games on a field that was drenched with water, a muddy field. You know, there's highlights of him being tackled and he slides for 15 yards out of bounds and stuff. Because he was, you know, a mutter. You know, he could play in any kind of a surface. He was just so effing sensational with the ball under any elements. He was something else. He was also known for things that he would say off the field. One quote here that I find and that I think it's worth sharing. Where is it? Here it is. He says, athletes as role models and heroes, that's a hoax, a sick hoax. The men and women who are fighting in our wars, they are the true heroes. And that's just a really fabulous statement, and I think is a clue into his heart and what he thought. The other one that comes to mind is that, you know, God is first, family and friends are second, and I am third, which was I Am Third was the title of his autobiography. So, you know, he as the Hall of Fame CEO said, he was very a selfless man. He had an ego like everybody else, but he demonstrated a lot of selfless qualities, didn't he?
Yeah, and the last thing is, I got to be honest with you, and condolences to Artie and to the family. His lovely wife, Artie, was a wonderful woman, and I know she's hurting badly today. But the concussion stuff really bugged him because he often said that, and I think Saquon Barkley might even be agreeing today. I think Saquon Barkley would say, I'd rather get a concussion and be out for a week than get a knee injury and maybe risk my career. Gale Sayers said, he predicted this years ago to me. Years ago. He said, if they start telling people to lower the point of attack, okay?
Yeah.
Instead of hitting around high and hitting around the shoulder pads, that's good for a lot of people. He goes, but for wide receivers or running backs, if they get hit low, you ask them. Because I'll tell you this, I'd rather have the headache than have my career lost. I'll never forget that he said that to me.
Wow.
And he goes, ask, and I would ask Saquon Barkley, would you have preferred a concussion, even though 50 years from now, you might forget your name? And I got to tell you, right now, he'd say yes over what he's got, period.
Well, we'll leave it at that, and we'll start the show as we usually do.
Radio is scripted now. We just come up with it. We don't use computers. We don't rehearse. We're going to talk about this next. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the Bulls. And then we're going to have Brad Bixon. And then we're going to have all this. No. No. If you don't know what you're going to talk about in the top of your head before a show, you shouldn't be in the business. I don't know what you got. I feel like Vince Vaughn in a couple's retreat. The sharks are circling. Old school, baby.
You're listening to the Mike North Advantage, and it begins right now.
That That's right, the Mike North Advantage restarts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman. And boy, we have a lot of sports to talk about. We have got the hiring of a new head coach for the Chicago Bulls, Billy Donovan, somebody Mike knows very well. We've got the Cubs and Sox both sliding a bit. And we've got plenty of Chicago Bears talking. Mike has his three picks for the week. So let's bring Mike in now again. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, Aldo. Ready to go. 3-3 with the Bears Barroom. We'll talk about my picks with ESPN a little bit later on when I make my picks, which is a slow start. But right now, 3-3. I did have Cleveland. To be honest with you, it was a scary week. It's been a scary 2 weeks, but things are going to get better. Of course, we talked about Gale Sayers. Billy Donovan, I mean, is huge. And I'll tell you why. In-game coaching just got, like I said on Twitter, at North to North, or follow at Aldo Gandia. N-O-R-T-H, number two, N-O-R-T-H. I know Billy Donovan will not call timeout when a Bull player is making a layup. Okay? And that's what we saw Jim Boylan do, nonsensical things. And Billy Donovan, I didn't think that they would pull the trigger. But they do it every decade and a half. The last Bull coach that had prior head coaching NBA experience hired was Scott Skiles. So that was in 2003, and that was another one that I was involved with. He came on my show, and I basically told him the Bulls had showed so much faith in him, and then he wanted to hold out for even more money that he was asking for, and he called my show, and then after that, John Paxson called the show and thanked me for helping steer the negotiations. You won't hear that too much in the media because I did it out of a hand. Jerry Reinsdorf said the same thing. But that was 17 years ago. Think about that. Now, we've had Thibodeau. We've had other people. But none were prior head coaching experience. I think he's a great hire. I think he wanted to get away from the Western Conference. I don't think there was any winning, especially with a point guard named Chris Paul, who's going to be 36 years old. They're an older team. Plus, there's more talent in the Western Conference. I think he can make some noise. I'm looking for them to make the playoffs in the first season. I don't want to hear any excuses. I think they got a ready team. He left a rebuild challenge in Oklahoma City. They tried to sign him to a two-year extension. He said no. He was not into the rebuilding mode. Mm-hmm. So apparently, Aldo, he doesn't think the Bulls are a rebuilding team.
Right.
Or he thinks the road is easier, which I agree with, in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, Adrian Wojnarowski, who I believe he was the first one to break the news, said that what he was concerned about, and maybe Adrian was speculating here, is that the Oklahoma Thunder are on their way down, and so the rebuilding really isn't going to start maybe for another season or so, and that he looked at the Bulls with all the young talent and said, well, these guys have a head start on rebuilding. Adrian also said that one of the key things about bringing this coach into the Chicago Bills organization is how it could impact the acquisition of free agents. Let's listen to Adrian Wojnarowski on ESPN.
Chicago should be in the conversation with big free agents. There's no reason the Chicago Bulls shouldn't be part of that. But to get your organization to that, being in a big market's not enough. New York has shown that. You know, the L.A. teams, when they weren't run well, showed that. You know, big free agents don't just show up. I think there's a hope there that Billy Donovan can, start to develop the group they have, but just bring a baseline of we've got a head coach, we've got someone who's coach of the year, who's been in the playoffs every year. And so I think for both sides, the fit really worked.
What do you think, Mike? You think that free agents will now start to look at the Chicago Bulls organization and maybe forgive the way they've treated some of their players in the past? Because that's a huge issue, isn't it?
Well, it's a huge issue, but it looks like to me I was wrong about Paxson. I mean, this is not a John Paxson move. Because Paxson would not, I don't believe, hire a Billy Donovan. I don't. Because they couldn't tell Billy Donovan what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this new guy has been hired to do the job that I thought he'd be fifth or sixth commanding. But when I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see Darth Warman and Paxson, if this other guy isn't there, how do you pronounce the guy's name? The new guy? Do you have any idea?
Arturus.
General manager.
Yeah, Arturus Karnishivas, I believe.
Karnishivas, yeah. That guy. I'm going to come up with a nickname for him.
Yes.
Anyway, I don't think Paxson or Darth Warman would go, hey, we're going to hire Billy Donovan. I don't. Because Billy Donovan, I think, had to be given assurances. Now, how much control is he going to have? I'm sure he's going to have say. So I like this little deal here. I think I feel comfortable with it. And, you know, I'm willing to let go of the time I got mad at Billy Donovan. We were getting the award, I was the first radio guy that was inducted into Chicagoland Sports Hall of Fame. Huge honor back then.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Donovan got the award as the Ray Meyer Award for Best Coach of the Year. So he was inducted. And we're sitting next to each other. And I said, hey, Billy, I do radio in Chicago. Because he asked me, what do I do? And we're talking back and forth normally.
Mm-hmm.
For 10 minutes, 15 mm-hmm. minutes, we're sitting next to each other on these leather chairs. We're being honored. I said, listen, would you like to come on my show? Yeah, he goes, call my people, no doubt. No doubt I'll be on your show. So I called. We had people call 2-3 times. No, no, no. End of the year, called them. No, no, no. Okay? So I let him have it. Okay, but that was like 15, 20 years ago. He's come. I let him have it. I go, why? How can you say that and not show up?
Yeah, exactly. What the hell?
But maybe something got lost in translation. I couldn't get a hold of him. So I, you know, at the time I blamed him because he did say it.
Right.
But I don't know if anybody, the people, you got to go through SIDs and everything else, sports information people. So I don't know if he got the deal because I didn't have his number. You took the Bulls job. All's forgiven. All's forgiven. Because, you know what? He's taking a chance on his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
He's made the playoffs every single year.
Yeah.
He's a 2-time NCAA champion.
Right.
He's like he's a Chicago-type guy. I was comfortable talking to him, so I'm really in with the hiring of this guy. I didn't think it would happen. It did. I didn't think Paxson would lose any power. It looks like he has.
Yeah, you said it. I mean, he's got a great winning percentage, 243 wins, 157 losses as the coach of the Thunder, 5 consecutive trips to the playoffs, as you just said, his winning percentage. Among coaches who have coached at least 100 games in NBA history, he is number 16. And trails only people like Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich among active coaches. So this guy comes with a great resume. Now, there is one knock on him, and it comes from people. A lot of it that I see are people who have followed him closely, Oklahoma fans and media members, is they say that his in-game coaching and some of the tactical moves that he makes during the course of the game are questionable. Now, that can be said about any coach, but you follow basketball a lot. Do you have any insight into, you know, how he coaches a game, and have you detected anything that you think is a negative, or is your opinion that, you know, hell, you know, everybody makes mistakes, but this guy makes a lot fewer of them than any, given his one loss record?
2-time national champion.
Mm.
Makes the playoffs every year in the NBA. I'm sure he's made a couple odd decisions in his career, but he's also got a couple guys that he knew he wasn't going to win with. Chris Paul is a perennial loser in the playoffs, period. And so is Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
They're talented players, but they're not the guys that are going to knock off LeBron or, you know, Denver or teams like that. So I think a lot of losses came from the play of his players. I watched Oklahoma City play, and don't forget, he lost Durant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wasn't Kevin Durant on the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Yes,
he was. Westbrook?
Yeah.
I think he coaches better if those two guys are still on the team, you know what I mean, than Paul or George. That being said, tell them to watch Jim Boylan tape, and then they complain about Donovan.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Because at least there's a history. At least there's a resume.
Yeah.
At least there's accomplishment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like comparing. I mean, look at Boylan. There was none of that.
No.
None.
None.
And in-game coaching, he had no idea. what he was doing. I mean, if you know anything about the game, I coached for 6 years. I'm not trying to say I know everything about the game, but my God, I mean, he made Pete Myers look like John Wooden. So I got to be honest with you. So I'm sorry. You know what? It's a definite 1,000 steps up, in my opinion.
There you go. Pete Myers. Oh, my gosh, that is true.
Oh, my God. Even Pete Myers and Randy Brown. You know, I think Will Perdue, Bill Cartwright. They were all over there, I think. All those guys. Paxson. I mean, the GM. I mean, we're going to start downing a two-time national champion. Look. You know me, Aldo. Yeah. I'll criticize if I think it's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm sorry. This guy's like Patton walking in compared to anybody in the Bulls organizational front office. Mm-hmm. Now, Patton will meet champions. Paxson's got championships. All the ex-Bulls got championships. But as players, he's got a chance, I think, to knock these Bulls to another level. Because they will not look at him as a joke. Mm-hmm. Like Zach LaVine and the other guys, basically, we're looking at Boylan as.
Yeah, exactly. Zach LaVine on his Facebook page actually said something like, "Wow, we got this guy to coach the team," and so he sounded pretty excited by it.
But they had a junior high coach basically coaching them. They did. You can look at it any way you want. Didn't look it. Didn't talk it. Couldn't strategize it. Nothing. Nothing worked for him. Period. And his players didn't like him.
Yeah. That is absolutely for sure that the players just did not get along with Jimmy Boylan. And so the thing about Donovan,
he was an assistant, and they usually are the guys that get along with the players.
Exactly. And Donovan is going to come in here and get immediate respect from every player on that roster. But speaking of the roster, this is the next big thing that Arturis Karnišević has to do, is look at this roster, which is what he's been doing. But, you know, add players, replace players, you know, potentially trade. They've got the 4th overall pick in the NBA draft. And while there is probably not a player that is going to be available there that is going to be a franchise changer, that does have trade value. So, is there anybody in the NBA, like a, you know, Billy Simmons or somebody that you would say, okay, let's package a couple of those players you got on the roster and that 4th overall pick, and let's bring in a bona fide NBA superstar to this organization? Or do you think, let's use this 4th overall pick and continue to build with young players and then make necessary changes and go after the free agent market when the money starts to free up in a year?
What do you think you could get for Zach LaVine and the 4th pick? And it depends who the 4th pick is, but Zach LaVine, to me, seems like their only tradable player. And Zach LaVine, I think this is a big year for him because defense is basically a rumor to him, okay? He loves his personal stats. He's a stat stuffer. The Bulls will lose 114-98, but he'll make sure on some nights, 9 of 24 shooting, you know, that he'll get his.
Right.
I think he's got to incorporate himself more as a team player, but I think Billy Donovan knows if he can be elevated by Zach LaVine. Mm-hmm. I think he does. But if Zach LaVine doesn't pay attention to the other end, and if the other Bulls don't pay attention to the other end, then I think they're all trade bait. There should be no untouchables on this team. There's no such thing as an untouchable on a team as bad as the Bulls.
Yeah. I'm with you there. You know, and I really like the...
Is Zach LaVine going to lead us to a title? I say no. By the time they're ready to go to a title, he'll be 4 years older.
Yeah. And Shinowski pointed out the other day on his podcast, Sharpshooters, that Levine, however you pronounce his name, he's never been on a winning team throughout his career. And so and Will Perdue, who was his guest on that show, says that the first thing a new coach has to do when he joins the organization is instill a winning culture. These guys have just been losing for too much, and so it sometimes takes a while to get them to start thinking like winners, and it could be, Will Perdue said, we could see some really bad results, one loss wise, the first year or so, because the first thing they got to do is just really get these young players to play like real pros. And that, I think, is a legit point by Will Perdue.
Well, it's a legit point. It tells you that the front office jeopardized and bastardized the development of the young players with people like Jim Boylan and others who I don't think are near the top of their profession.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's guys that have been assistant coaches sitting on that bench. I just scratch my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd be afraid to order a cup of coffee from them. So I think Billy Donovan will put his system in. And I don't want to hear Will Perdue say, hey, I think he can win the first year. I think he can win the second year. I think he can win this year. I think Billy Donovan's out to win this year. I don't think the Eastern Conference to be in the top eight is asking a lot.
I agree
and
with
I
that.
Do know we have talent, but I don't. It's not like you're in the West. And I'll still say this. Billy Donovan looked at the West and said, no matter how good I am, I'll always be knocked out once I get into the playoffs.
Yes, I agree with you, Mike. I think that expecting a playoff berth as the eighth or seventh seed is not a huge request.
Not over there.
Right. Not in these.
I mean, you've got Denver coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, what do we have to battle? Boston and Miami. I get it.
Right.
They're tough.
Right.
But my God, and as far as, you know, guys that have been on losing teams, I won't penalize LaVine for that. Because all I have to do is point everybody to the Lakers and see what's happened because they took Anthony Davis off a bad franchise and he was smart enough to go with LeBron James. And now they're winning, even though LeBron James thinks he should have gotten more votes for MVP. When, quite frankly, folks, and I know that the Lakers didn't play well recently, but quite frankly, folks, he's not even the best player on his team. Okay? So that's nonsensical. Same with Kevin Garnett that left the Timberwolves and then went to Boston. Mm-hmm. Now he's a champion. So, you know, maybe LaVine goes to a place like Oklahoma City. Maybe LaVine goes to a place like Atlanta, or maybe he goes somewhere and they get into the playoffs. Will it be because of Zach LaVine? Yeah, partly. But will Zach LaVine be in the playoffs because of better personnel around him? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's turn our attention to...
I'm on a roll right now with this basketball stuff.
Oh, I know.
We started off with players. I mean, you talk about a transition.
Nobody can do it like you, Mike.
Well, we're rolling.
Let's talk about that NBA game that was on last night. We are recording this on Wednesday morning, and late last night, the Denver Nuggets came... Well, actually, they held on to beat the Lakers, who had a surge, but then Denver just said, get out of here. They win 114-106, and the series is now 2-1 with the Lakers on top. Do you think that the Nuggets, what do you think the Nuggets' chances are of pulling the upset and heading to the NBA Finals by knocking off the Lakers?
Well, they should have won the other night.
Yeah.
But Davis hit a last-second bucket.
Mm-hmm.
They should have won the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when you go out and get pedigree. I mean, I would ask everybody this. Are the Lakers going to lose to Denver? They very well could. Murray's been unbelievable. They're playing some defense. They're not the old Denver Nuggets, Doug Bowe, 189-178.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no defense. Malone's doing a good job with them. But look at Anthony Davis. Can you imagine if the Bulls got a guy like him last year and Donovan's the coach?
Mm-hmm.
You're automatically a better team. It takes one player, one superstar. They got two, okay?
All right.
So, I still think the Lakers are in the driver's seat, but Davis saved them the other night, and you know what? Denver's formidable. They've come back twice from 3-1 deficits in the previous two playoff rounds, and they've come back and won them. So 2-1 is nothing to the Denver Nuggets right now, and I don't think, as you can see, they don't fear. And there's no home crowds, there's no road crowds, and that's, I think, a plus to a team like Denver.
That's a great point. Now, over at NBA.com, there's a story asking the question, is the fact that the Lakers don't have that third star on their team making them susceptible to an upset by the Nuggets? And Frank Vogel said that Kyle Kuzma, he should be and must be our third best player, but at times he doesn't really live up to that reputation. Now, this team has Howard, they have Rajon Rondo, they've got they've got some really good complementary players that can come off the bench and can provide valuable moments. But do you think that the Lakers really lack that third superstar? Like during the Bulls' heyday, it was Dennis Rodman for the second three and Horace Grant for the first three. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I never thought Horace was a superstar, but I thought he was a very good player.
Right.
I don't know if I can put Rodman I hesitate to put Rodman or Horace Grant in the company of the great Kuzma. if Kuzma's your third guy and you're Frank Vogel, you might as well put on your old Indiana Pacers jacket and get ready to get knocked out of the playoffs. You need a little bit more, but your two superstars are so dominant.
Yeah.
And I would ask everybody this, who's the third superstar on Denver?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And their players are not as good as the Lakers' first two players.
Right.
Okay? But their coach is good. They teach defense. They don't panic. They've come back twice from 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Deficits, it's unbelievable what they've done. People didn't think they'd be here.
Mm-hmm.
So I expect this to go all the way to 7. And how devastating would this be if the Lakers end up losing this thing?
Ooh.
To LeBron's legacy.
Yep.
I mean, that's basically it. I mean, there's half the country can't stand the guy basically already for other things.
Mm-hmm.
But I always love him as a basketball player. If the Bulls got him tomorrow, I wouldn't give a damn about him except to play basketball. That's all you care about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's still going to be hard for Denver. You got the two best players in the league. You got LeBron, and you got he's a Chicago guy. I call him Tony. You got Tony Davis.
Tony Davis.
Well, you know what happened? You know how Anthony Davis, because I saw him in high school. You know how he became so good? I think he went to, I'm trying to remember, was it Crane or Carver? I think it was Carver. I was doing public league stuff at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was a 6'2 guy.
Oh.
So he was a guard.
Mm-hmm.
So when people see him shoot and see him handle the ball, he shot up like David Robinson did, 4 or 5 inches in 1 year. And then he kept growing. So he knew how to do all that stuff because he was a guard originally. And then he became what he is now. I mean, he's played more than one position, and it wasn't always center.
I really love the fact that you've seen him play from that young of an age and seen him progress and become more.
I saw Garnett play. I saw Ronnie Fields play. I for a year,
mm-hmm.
I did the public league game of the week, and on Channel 20, and I saw a lot of these guys, and I did Ronnie Fields.
We
did a game of Farragut.
Yeah, that
I went down to Farragut and did the game. It was awesome. I mean, you know, I didn't think Ronnie Fields was ever going to make it, but he got hyped up like a Jordan type. But he had no other game except he was a dominant physical guy, and he could jam in high school. Once you got to college, you look at the guys, and they're as big as you. So that was the end of that.
There you go.
You know? And as talented as you, you know?
That's amazing. All right, I want to talk quickly about the Celtics and Heat. They play a pivotal game for tonight, Wednesday night, and the Heat took the first two games, or excuse me, the Celtics, the Heat took the first two games, and the Celtics are looking to duplicate the success they had in Game 3 to make it a 2-1 series. What are your thoughts heading into that series? Do you have a particular preference on which team is going to win the series?
Well, I love Jimmy. I mean, the Bulls, what the Bulls do is they develop players and they get rid of them.
Right.
Jimmy Butler should still, I mean, I wish he was still on the Bulls.
Yeah.
The Hoiberg hiring just killed that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of Thibodeau, who taught him everything he knows, just killed that whole thing. And Jimmy's days were numbered when he came out, I think about 3 weeks into the season, Aldo, and said, we need the head coach to get tougher.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of the line for Jimmy Butler. Because Paxson and Gar did not have the mental toughness to take criticism from a guy that was going to become a potential two-way superstar, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he is. So, yeah, I mean, can the Celtics come back and win? I like Kemba Walker. I like a lot of the pieces on their team. I'm tired of hearing about Brad Stevens. I think it's time to put up or shut up. But Pat Riley is the man. I used to argue with people who said, Phil Jackson's better than Pat Riley. I go, no, he's not. Because remember this, folks. You know how good you had to be to win in, with the Knicks? Seriously, think about that. And also, to, he changed his style. He also, I mean, remember he was upset the way the Pistons used to treat the Lakers
mm-hmm.
when he coached them?
Yeah.
When he took over the Knicks, ladies and gentlemen, let me just name a few of the daisies because he didn't want to play physical basketball anymore because of his poor Lakers. Let me tell you how he changed. How's Patrick Ewing, John Starks, and Anthony Mason doing for you? They turned into
yeah.
the bad boys of the 90s.
That's right.
And he then hires a guy at Miami after he takes the job, Eric Spoelstra. We're going, you're hiring a video assistant? You don't know what the hell you're doing. Okay? The man, and I said he was better than Phil Jackson because I said Phil Jackson, and this was way before he took the Knicks general manager job.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because Pat Riley can put together a team. He doesn't need one waiting for him like Phil Jackson. And you know what I heard? Screw you, Mike, you suck. Screw you. And you know what? I was right.
Mm.
Pat Riley not only is a great head coach, but he's a great general manager and president. Okay? I mean, think about that. He knows every ounce of the game. And to me, I think Miami, and I think he saw Jimmy Butler when everybody else saw Jimmy Butler as a supporting cast guy when he first got to Miami. Well, that ended the third day when he threatened to kill everybody on his own team if they didn't play harder.
Mm. Hey, Mike, as a fan, not as a handicapper, but what two teams would you prefer to see in the NBA Finals? Are you thinking Heat Lakers, Heat Nuggets, or you want to see the Celtics in there against one of those two Western teams? As a fan.
Heat Nuggets.
Yeah, me too.
I'm tired of the LeBron Bull. I really am. I'm tired of him because, you know, he tries to hog the spotlight from Anthony Davis, who's averaging 25 and 10,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's one of the best passing centers in the game, who can hit three-pointers better or as good as LeBron James. I'm tired of him as a me-me guy setting himself up with great teams. Not that he doesn't help make them a great team.
Right.
So I'm rooting for Denver. I'm rooting for Miami. And that would be a great series. And I think Miami's got then, look out. Jimmy Butler, to me right now, is the best clutch player in the game of basketball. He's at last seconds now, he's starting to pour in three-pointers. And he didn't have that when he was with the Bulls.
Yeah, and he just does it all. He doesn't demand the ball like some superstars in the league do. He just is. He knows how to win and lead players. He's really an incredible player to watch.
Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody owes Barroom money, okay?
Uh-huh.
Let's say there's a bill. You know, we don't have a bill collector.
Mm-hmm.
You can take any player in the NBA to come with you to collect that money.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't take LeBron James because he'd back down. If the guy said, I ain't paying you, what are you going to do about it? He wouldn't do it because LeBron James is fake tough. I'm taking Jimmy Butler with me, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're getting the money. That's it.
There you
go. From a guy who's had to collect money before for other things, Jimmy Butler would be my man.
There
period.
You go. There you go. And, you know, and I admire LeBron James. He really is.
Too.
Yeah, he's really one of the best players ever to play the game. But you're right. There is, you know, he is the Darth Vader of the NBA to many, many fans. And he is to me. I don't want him to see him win more NBA championships than Michael Jordan. I want all this talk about him being better than Michael Jordan. It's ridiculous and stupid.
God, yeah. Please help us.
Yes.
How long have we been hearing that bull? We heard it with Kobe.
Yeah.
We heard it with Harold Miner.
Yes.
We heard it with Vince Carter. I mean, I can name them all.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember Harold Miner?
Oh, they yes.
Be baby Jordan. No. He's baby Leroy in a silent movie compared to Jordan.
Exactly.
Remember baby Leroy?
Oh, yes. You and I do. I don't, I'm not sure any of our other listeners do.
Yeah, baby Leroy. Or check out Jackie Cooper in the Charlie Chaplin movies. Go back on Wikipedia. He's a child actor compared to Michael Jordan.
Exactly.
Harold Miner.
Exactly. All right.
He's a minor. That's what he is. compared to a major.
He really, really is. All right, let us win some money.
Well, you're going to the wrong place if you're coming to me. Because here's the thing I've always... See, I can laugh about this because I have something that not many people do. I have two things that I do. Number one, I have a track record of success. So I have a track record of four great years mm-hmm. of it, not only winning the first 2 weeks
right.
at Ballroom, but I also have a record of the last couple of years at ESPN 1000
right.
winning. I needed Cleveland last week. Mm-hmm. Did Cleveland win that game? Yeah, I think they won. I had to look twice.
Yes.
Check that score real quick. One more time, Aldo. Just check the Cleveland score. I want to hear it. Because it was the only one I wanted all week. Go on.
I will indeed.
But just read it to me. Go ahead.
Hold on. Let me fire it up here. This is week two, the Browns 35, the Bengals 30.
No. I'm going to tell you something. 3-3 is not 3-3. Because I lied. Because I was 0-3 on the Barroom. Because I thought they won by more than 6, and they didn't. They were getting 6. So I'm going to tell everybody this right now. I'm 2-4 on the Bears Barroom. I'm fessing up. You know why? This is what the great ones do.
That's right.
When a Babe Ruth goes 0-4, he's got to face the press. When the Utah coach blows 3 straight games to Denver, he's got to face the press.
That's right.
When Mike North... he has his first 2 weeks since he's become a major handicapper, which was 5 years ago, and his worst start since he handicapped personally for himself since 1996. You got to say it. I am getting edged out. I had Philadelphia last week on the Barroom.
Mm-hmm.
They were winning. I had Detroit on the Barroom. They were winning.
They were winning, yes.
I had Cleveland on the Barroom. They were winning.
Yep.
So... right now, it's all just bad luck. The public was 10-5 last week.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I always don't go against the public, because I don't. But I'm 2-4 in the Barroom. I am 0-4 on odds couple and 0-2 with the picks with Carmen and Yurko. I've never gone 2 weeks in a row without winning a game at least. But I've also, 1 week in the Sun Times, went 1-16. But also went 18-1-1 after 5 weeks with best picks. So it's going to come, but I had to put it out there because the reason I have and I do well with people is because I'm honest. So let's go to my next batch. And if you want to fade me, right now would be the time. But sooner or later, I'm going to hit pay dirt. Okay,
oh,
you ready,
yes.
Aldo?
Yeah, I'm totally ready. Let's do it.
Aldo dozed off. Aldo goes, okay, you lost your ass, and shut up, and please win something.
Please.
Please, dear Lord. But you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Here's what I'm going to tell everybody. There's a lot of on right now, and you didn't, like you see on Monday mornings,
mm-hmm.
if you are on Twitter, which Aldo is, mm-hmm. you didn't hear a whole lot of handicappers bragging this week.
Yeah.
None at all.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that are doing well, though, and I'll give them full credit. My first game.
Okay.
It's going to be in college football, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
Yes, sirree. BYU minus 15 against Troy. Troy put up some points last week. Troy did well, but they didn't cover. I'm going to take BYU. No, Jim McMahon's not with them. Steve Young's not with them. Robbie Bosco's not with them. But BYU is a formidable team that opened up. At 15, it's down to 14. Let's take BYU minus the 14, okay?
Okay.
And I am also going to take, and this is going to be a tough game, as the Los Angeles Rams go again on the road, okay? They were on the road last week. They beat Philadelphia. They go home. They got to go back to Buffalo. I'm taking Buffalo in the pros to keep their streak going against a good L.A. Ram team. Eldo, back to you.
Hold on
two
a sec. Two picks this week?
Yes, two picks only.
All right. So
you don't want any more from me, believe me, right now. You want to go like... And by the way, I did say to everybody, with the smaller venues with no fans, and I told Carmen DeFalco this, and he agreed, the system that I work and the system that we work right now is not working. And some of that comes into full stadiums, emotion, young football teams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Kyler Murray is playing fantastic. Does he play that way in front of a full house? We don't know. No excuses. We come back and win this week.
There you go. I love the attitude. Now, I just want to make sure the Rams have opened as a 2.5 underdog versus the Bills this week. So you've got...
Yeah, I got them right here in Glantz Culver. Oh, no. They opened up, and this is funny. They opened up at 3. They're down to 2.5. I believe you take them at 2.5 or 3.
So you're taking who at 2.5 or 3?
I'm taking the Buffalo Bills at 2.5 or 3 because I just said that the Rams are traveling for the second straight time. They went to Philadelphia. Now they go home to California, and they go to Buffalo. I don't care if you're a businessman. I don't care if you're me and Aldo. I know this. Me and Aldo would be complaining about having to fly to Buffalo after flying to Philadelphia the week before.
Absolutely. And the Rams have suffered some injuries with their first two running backs. We're not sure who's going to open the game toting the ball. It could be Daryl Henderson, the third string back, who is, you know, a fine player, a super speedy player, but he hasn't had the experience carrying the ball. And so when you go face a tough defense like Buffalo, you've got to have a rushing attack alongside with that
and
passing
Allen's
attack.
And Allen's playing good, too. But let me say anything about this injury.
Right.
Last week, one of my main picks was the San Francisco 49ers, and they had injuries to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Except their quarterback, and they won.
Yeah.
But they played a bad football team, the Jets.
Right.
So, you know, we can take that for grain of salt. They're pros. They got to line up, and they have to execute.
Right, exactly. And but, you know, from a professional gambling situation, you can really face a tough week when all of a sudden so many games are impacted because of the injuries involved. And I'm not here to make excuses for anyone, but that's the reality. That's a fact, man. So many guys going down. It is tough, you know.
You know what I looked at last year and the year before? And I looked at the injuries after the first 2 weeks last year and the year before.
Yeah.
I think there's not as many stars, but they're injured every year. The Bears had injuries before they played a game.
Yes.
Robert Quinn.
Yes.
I mean, the guy was hurt. By the way, did he play this past week?
He did. He got a strip sack in his very first play
as
a Chicago Bear.
I forgot about that strip sack.
Yeah.
I know Khalil Mack made some noise, too.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
I am glad you're happy. Let's turn our attention now to Chicago baseball. Let's talk about the Cubs first. They make the playoffs yesterday. They clinch a playoff spot, but they lost. They lost 3-2. Are you worried at all about this team? Because they're just not hitting. They're getting some good pitching, and Kyle Hendricks is on the mound tonight. And they're facing, I forgot who's pitching for the Pirates, but he's not a very good pitcher. This is a great opportunity for those bats to come alive. But they might have to do it without Chris Bryant, who suffered an oblique strain. I'm not even sure what an oblique is, Mike. Do you know what an oblique is?
Yeah, I had one. It went away in my 53rd year. It's under the armpit, sort of the side of the back.
Okay.
And I will say this. Pittsburgh's pitching Williams, who's having a nightmarish year, 1-8, with a 6.70 ERA. Hendricks, who's 6-4. That tells you the lack of support he's got because his ERA is 2.93. That being said, the Cubs last night tied the game. I like that they had a little comeback in them, but they can't hit. But you know what? You need pitching in the playoffs. If you're asking me which team I think will go farther, and you can take this as a grain of salt because I'm cold right now, and maybe I'll be cold next week. Who knows? I mean, that's the way gambling is. Sometimes you have a bad year.
Yep.
Sometimes you have a great year like I've had. Maybe the same can go for the Cubs. They had a great regular season. Will they have a great postseason? I do know you have to hit, but I'd rather have a team that's going to pitch than hit because notoriously in the playoffs, a lot of these big bopper teams come in, like the White Sox, but if they don't have enough pitching, they go home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say the Cubs have a better chance of going farther. But then again, I'm the guy that said that the White Sox wouldn't win over 32 games, and they're already up to 34, and I think Renteria has done a good job. I'll be rooting for both of them. Do I expect either one of them to be in the World Series? No, but surprise me.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about the job done by first-year manager Grandpa Ross?
Grandpa Ross.
Whatever his name is. Are you happy?
Every time I look at him, I raise my hand. just take the wallet. He's got the mask on.
That's right, he does. He's religious about
that.
That's
another thing. I love when they put their arm on a guy and say, better luck next time. And the guy doesn't have a mask and the other guy does. It's a special moment for me. I think that Ross has done a good job when you consider they're not hitting.
Right.
I think Darvish has been huge for them. Mm-hmm. Like I predicted, I said he'd have a big year this year. He came in shape. He was ready to play when a lot of players like Baez and others have not been. Mm-hmm. Bryant, to me, is trade bait to me now. I don't care what he does.
Yeah.
I heard a kid yesterday, I put him up on Twitter, John Ziegler, who basically said, and he's told the truth, he's had 1 year, 2016.
Right.
And he's basically, he feels a bust. I can't deny it. I can't believe how Chris Bryant's played the last 2-3 years. He plays feeble. He's more of a laid-back guy. I think the West Coast should be his next destination. I'd like to get him out of the league, but I think he's trade bait. I think you signed Baez before. Even though Baez is having a rough year at the plate, he's so good in the field, and he's sturdy. You signed Baez, and you let Bryant go, and you try to get something in return.
Yeah, it is incredibly disappointing what has happened to Chris Bryant in his career. And this season, I mean, he has just hit rock bottom. I'm not quite sure. I'd have to look up what his contract situation is, because I think he's close to approaching free agency status. And so in my mind,
he's been crying about an extension like Robinson with the Bears, all these other guys. And you know what? If you're the Cubs and you want to give him $200 million, best of luck to you.
No, yes. You cannot do that. That would be...
Play David Bodie at third. I'll live with him. There's teams that win with ordinary third basemen. Mm-hmm. I mean, Colorado's got Arenado. You don't see them anywhere. You know what I mean? And,
right.
And he's, you know, right now they're 24 and 29. They got a great third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But they're not winning.
Yep.
So, you know, superstars are good, but what's not good is fading superstars or guys that had one season, or maybe I'll give him two at the most. He's been a huge disappointment, and he's been very brittle. Very brittle.
Indeed.
I mean, you're going to sign a guy to $200 million that goes up, swings the bat once, and then pulls himself from the game?
Right.
Come on.
Yes. I totally agree with you. And he is going into an arbitration year in 2021. So if you can't package him in some kind of deal where he works out a contract with somebody else, then just let him walk. Let him go. And then you use that money. He's being paid $16 million this season.
Wow.
Actually $18.6 million this season. You use that to sign somebody else. Or if you really want to give away $200 million, whatever it is that he was asking for, there should be some other players in free agency that you target and go after. But Chris Bryant should not be in the future plans for the Chicago Cubs.
And I want to say this too, Jim DeChase. I don't have any axe to grind with Jim DeChase and Lenny Casper. But I'm listening to them the other night, and while they show the replay of Schwarber dogging it,
yes,
after a ball, where they're, I can count on one hand. I think you can too, Aldo. The number of triples that have been hit to left field at Wrigley Field, it don't happen, folks. He dogs after the ball, okay? Then he nonchalantly throws it in. And I got to hear Jim DeChase say, I think he was hustling. What a shame.
Yeah.
I mean, what a shame to hear that when you're watching the replay. And I don't know who you're trying to curry favor with by saying that, but you did not watch the game, or you didn't look at the replay you were watching. Or, I mean, because I was stunned by that, and the excuses. And here's another thing. Here's another thing, and I have nothing against anybody's. He's gotten heavier again, Schwarber.
Yeah.
He came in shape last year.
Yeah.
God bless him. He just got married. Believe me when I tell you this, folks. The first year I was married, I was eating whole meatloafs my wife was making me. You know what I mean? Schwarber's put on weight. There's balls hit to his left he can't get to that other speedier outfielders like maybe a Maben would get to, or the right. So him in left scares me for the playoffs. But he's got 10 homers, and that's, it's feast or famine with him.
Yeah, I'm with you totally on that. Cubs are facing some huge questions. I mean, do you bring back John Lester? He had an emotional appearance at Wrigley Field and what could have been his last performance ever at Wrigley Field. He was emotional about it, said that he didn't pitch well because he had a lot of things on his mind. And, you know.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That alone, I had a lot of things on my mind. I didn't pitch well because I had a lot of things. I didn't do a good talk show because I got arrested the night before. No, I didn't. I don't want him back. He's done. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have a 500 pitcher on your hands.
Yep.
I think he can help somebody.
Yep.
But what kind of money's going to ask for?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You're emotional because you probably know you're not going to be asked back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Indeed.
My God, did he really? I didn't read that. You read that? He said that?
I actually heard it. I had it on, and he said, you know, there was a lot of things I was thinking about before the game and during the game, and perhaps I was pressing because of that. It was just a lot of things.
Excuse maker. And he's a champion. Yeah. Everybody makes excuses. You know, I didn't make my picks right because they didn't execute on the football field. It's all their fault. It's not my fault for making the picks, even though when I go big, like last year and the year before, I'm the one that is responsible for it. But when I lose, you know what?
Yeah.
These players got to execute. What a bunch of bullshit.
How about it?
Really?
Indeed. And then the one other player who I think he's got a vested option coming up, Anthony Rizzo. You got to pick him back up. You got to bring him back. He's up and down as a hitter, but you know he's still one of the better first basemen in the league, and you don't want to lose both your third baseman and your first baseman unless you're just going to start rebuilding again and not bring back Lester and rebuild around Javi and a couple of other guys. In my mind, you got to bring back Rizzo if you still want to compete for World Series.
I just don't like a first baseman that's friendlier with the opposition at first base than he is with his own players.
Yes.
I'm tired of his laughing with the opposing team. I'm tired of him being a kiss-ass with the opposing players. He acts like he's running for alderman. I want him to hate the opposition, and I really want him to produce like he can.
Yeah.
I really do. But but you're right. He's got to come back. But the nonsensical being a nice guy, joking around, laughing last year, laughing the last time they were in the playoffs when they're down 2-1, it gets old. And I'm not the only Cub fan that feels that way.
No,
I'm not.
I'm with you on that. You hate when a team is struggling and a player in particular.
And you're laughing on them.
Exactly.
And you're laughing in the dugout. It's okay to be jovial, but have a sense of urgency.
Exactly.
You know, but it figures. He's not a Chicago Italian. He's a Florida Italian.
There you
Chicago
go.
Italians go for the jugular. Florida Italians make meatballs and say, "Are these good?"
That's hilarious.
Come on.
Last night, I
acting like a meatball. Get serious.
Tuesday night, the White Sox scored two runs in the top of the 10th, took a 3-1 lead into the bottom of the 10th, and then all of a sudden, Jose Ramirez, it's a walk-off home run for the Indians to clinch a playoff spot. That, even the manager, Renteria, said after the game, that was a tough one. That was a tough one to lose. Are you worried at all about these White Sox? They seem to be in a bad stretch here. They've lost their fourth out of five games.
No, I'm not worried about them because I think it's gravy. I think that the schedule makers were and the divisions that they played were great. I believe they're like 21-5 or 21-6 against Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Kansas City, and I believe they're 4-5 under 500 against the Cubs, Minnesota, and Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they do get knocked out of the playoffs and don't win the World Series or don't get in, Rick Hahn's going to have to answer the logical question. You beat the teams you're supposed to beat, but you're not up to par with the teams that ended up beating you.
There you go. Now, tonight, they throw Lucas Giolito onto the mound, and the White Sox odds are +140, Indians -167. If I had $140, I would put it on the White Sox to win because I think they're going to break out of this slump, and I think Giolito's going to pitch a good game.
I'll take the pick. I'll add it on to my other two picks. I'll take Cleveland -167 because it doesn't make any sense to me, folks. I didn't even chart the game. I'm just having a fun bet with Aldo.
There you go.
I didn't even chart the game, but how the hell? Well, he's going up against a pretty good pitcher himself, Bieber.
Yeah.
So Bieber's 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
Giolito's 4-3, but he's got a no-hitter. Well, let me re-examine this.
Shane Bieber.
3.53 against 1.78.
Yeah.
But it's 167.
It's, you know,
I would take Cleveland. I'll take Cleveland. You could take the Sox.
Okay.
And we'll just have a fun bet. And I have nothing against Giolito.
Right.
I think he's been good, but he's had some bad outings. This Bieber's knockout. I think Cleveland, I thought they hurt themselves, basically. And they're going to be a wild card team, it looks like, although if they can't get past the first two. But I thought Cleveland, I mean, they traded Clevinger. They traded Trevor Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of the pitching they got going.
Yeah.
Clevinger's out there in San Diego. Bauer's knocking them out in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Although, and they had another guy that they got rid of, too, Kluber. Who's been on on the jump, but my God, they got rid of a Cy Young Award winner.
Mm-hmm,
so it's surprising where they're at. So you know what? Hopefully tonight, I'm not rooting against the Sox, but I'll just take the other side just to hopefully to get a win. But the way I'm going, you'll probably stop me, and I'll come back apologizing.
Well, the one thing that I'm worried about with this team is, you know, the White Sox, is they have so many young players. And so right now they're in a position of blowing the American League Central title. And so perhaps that's why they've lost 4 out of 5 games, is because, you know, they just because they're young, they just don't know how to win yet, especially these big games. And so that's why I think that you picking the Indians might be a really smart bet. And me, I'm picking the White Sox strictly because I'm a big fan of them and want them to win.
He's pitching too, and he's not a bad pitcher.
Absolutely.
But I would also say this to you.
Right.
You look at what and I think your pick is solid. I don't think it's a bad pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, you know, I think that could easily be one.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's really eerie right now. I like Renteria. Look, they took the bat out of McCann's hands, and it's working.
Yeah.
They start him once every 3-4 games.
Right.
They don't play him. Mm. They play Grandel's at 237. But by playing him periodically, they're lowering his free agent fee maybe. He's hitting 290 now. He was hitting 340. He caught a no-hitter and went 2-for-4 in that game. And then he didn't play for 3 days. So I know what the White Sox are doing. They want him back, but they want him back at their price. And they're sacrificing it by playing the $77 million man and sitting him, who I think's got to play a lot in the playoffs if they're going to have success.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree with your assessment there.
Have you ever seen a guy hitting 340 who caught a no-hitter sit 3 straight games?
It's ridiculous.
After that with no injury? No.
It's ridiculous. It's like so stupid. I don't get that. I just don't get that.
I know the front office, and I'm not taking anything against it, but I know the front office.
Mm-hmm.
It's tougher to negotiate with a guy if you play him every day and he's hitting over 310 or something than to let him bat once or twice a week and try to lower his average below to 300.
Yeah, I think McCann is going to be playing for a new team next year.
I was him, I wouldn't forget this.
Yeah, exactly, and he won't.
Giolito will be looking for him next year.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, all right, so let's go over your picks before we say goodbye. You've got
We didn't talk about the Bears. We talked about Gale.
Oh, my God, I forgot all about my Bears.
Are you out of your mind? Talked about Gale, we did a different format.
That's right. All right.
I'm going to say is the Foles Army is back.
Yeah.
We're advancing slowly.
I don't know why they're back.
Major gains over the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I saw today Commander Pompey, and I've also seen comments made by Major Potash of the Folesters Army, and there are other people like Rick Morrissey, Lieutenant Colonel Rick Morrissey, who has now been brought in. Morrissey says he's still not a believer in Trubisky. And at the same time, I would like Allen Robinson, and I'm only saying this because I talked to two guys who love Allen Robinson. I want to get your take on this.
Okay.
They love the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Both guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this one guy, Dan, comes up to me on the golf course the other day and says to me, "Hey, you being on the radio again this week?" I go, "Yeah." "Why don't you tell Allen Robinson I didn't appreciate him half-assing it this past week?" I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He got to have that interception, and it just seemed to me that his little deal with Instagram and everything else, you know, got to him a little bit." And I would say this, in a way he was right, I think that he didn't fight hard enough with that ball, but I'm not going to blame him. I thought it was a great play by the defensive back, but he did not have the game he had the week before, and I think some of the nonsense did affect him. But I wanted to ask you, because I like Allen Robinson, but you've been in his camp since the very beginning when he performed, Al.
Yeah, you know, I speculated, did he witness that Saquon Barkley injury and think to himself,
yeah,
holy shit, is this going to happen to me? It happened to me at Jacksonville. I tear my ACL on a contract year. He sees that happen to Barkley, who was also going into contract situation. So maybe it did, you know. At the same time, we saw him a week ago, you know, fly in the air, make a diving catch and go over the middle and stuff, so it's hard to say, but maybe subconsciously, maybe it did impact him. So
he's one of those guys, I think, that has got to let it go.
Yes.
The Bears, I don't think, are going to give him money, any kind of money beforehand. I have mentioned to people, and I mentioned it on Twitter, that Allen, as great as he is, and as great a pattern runner as he is, and as much as a believer he's made of me, and he's still the go-to guy for Trubisky, in my opinion, the bottom line is Tom Waddle, who was a possession receiver, averaged more yards per catch in two of his years than Allen Robinson did, like last year. Allen Robinson this year is averaging about 11, 12 yards a catch. Waddle 1 year averaged 14, another year averaged 12.5. And he was a possession receiver. That's the tough part. Do you give a possession receiver $20 million? And how much? And I think Allen Robinson had a good day last week, even though he had a bad day. You know why? Because Miller didn't show up.
Oh, my goodness.
And they saw Miller the week before and said, you know what? Maybe we should save our money with Robinson. Until you see that Mitch Trubisky, by the false forces, is not being given credit for maybe the greatest incompletion of all time thrown.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I don't see separation too much from Robinson, Wims, or Miller.
Miller, right.
I don't see a whole lot of separation. So this week, it's going to be interesting, Aldo. And it's Ryan now, after that devastating loss in number 87 for the Falcons, who just stood there and watched the onside kick, and didn't die for it, he'd be off the team. I would have fired him right there. You're off the team. You're on the recovery team, and you're watching a ball bounce around. And you don't even jump for it. And they lost that game. So this is a huge game. Can Atlanta bounce back? And can the Bear defense, which is second, according to Carmen DeFalco, in most drives allowed since 2018.
I saw that.
They've had 10 90-yard-plus drives.
Yeah.
Can the Bear defense stop Matt Ryan?
Yeah, that was a eye-opening stat. The Bears have given up more long drives than any other team in the NFL except one team. I forgot what the team was, but
Vegas Raiders.
There you go, the Raiders. And so that is an important stat, because
that's a trend.
Yes,
that's not a like once in a while thing. That's a trend.
Right.
You got like three a year.
Right, it happened.
3-4 a year.
The stat was beginning in 2018, so it actually includes Vic Fangio's last year, includes Chuck Pagano's first year, and the two games Pagano has coached this year. So it's a interesting stat, and that 95-yard drive by the Giants on Sunday was an ugly, ugly thing to see. And you just, you know, they're facing a team, the Atlanta Falcons, that have a super hot quarterback. Matt Ryan threw, what, 4 touchdown passes in week 2? He had multiple touchdown passes in week 1. Their one loss record is not impressive, but boy, oh boy, they've got an offense that can score. And this is going to be a huge, huge test.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, Vic Fazio, I really believe this. I like Pagano, but he calls too much zone. I also think that the other coordinator on the other side, I think against Fazio, I think the offensive coordinator went against him, for the most part, got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
Vic Fangio. I don't see that with Pagano. I see offensive coordinators, even last year, outguessing Pagano.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem that way with the other guy. So we'll see what happens. They're 2-0 though. And I know they played the Giants and Detroit. And by the way, to my buddy Mike Greenberg, who's dissecting how Trubisky second and off targets. Okay, you know, balls missing the target. Here's what I would say to my buddy Mike Greenberg. I wouldn't trade him for your pal Sam Darnold or Danny Dimes. Period, Mikey. So I'll take Trubisky at 2-0 with one of the great fourth quarter comebacks in the last 5 years in the NFL a week ago.
Yeah, and the Bears, by the way, are a 3-point underdog, and the spread, the over-under is at 48. So that's an interesting bet there, given that the Falcons have been scoring points.
How good is Atlanta's defense? See, that's the thing. It's Trubisky. I think it's going to be Matty Ice against the Bear defense.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to win, and we want to win maybe in a comfortable fashion, Trubisky's got to take care of that Atlanta defense. We'll see what happens.
Yep, man. And just looking at the stat here, Atlanta racked up 39 points last week, 380 yards of offense, and did not commit a single turnover, and yet they still lost. So,
well, the thing that's here's what I like about it, and I know Detroit is 0-2, and I know they probably should have won that game, and the Bears have really dodged some bullets, but Stafford didn't light us on fire. And I think we got to make Atlanta. We got to try. If I'm the guy, you rush four men and keep seven back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe an occasional blitz, but you got to keep seven back. You got to double team Jones. You got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, when you see the money going to a particular team, like in this particular game, BleacherNation.com is saying that Falcons, we're seeing 86% of the money going towards Atlanta. Do you pay attention to a stat like that?
Well, I'll give you a stat from last week. Mm-hmm. 90% of the money went for Green Bay, and they covered.
Okay.
You know, so that happens. Where, I'll give you another stat, though. 79% of the money went with the Vikings. And they lost Indianapolis.
Yeah. That's why they call it gambling. That's right. That is,
you know, so money I don't follow.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't, because the money went against Detroit last week and I picked them. The mm-hmm. money went with the Rams and I took Philly.
Right.
And you know what? Vegas took a beating last week. Most handicappers took a beating. But I have no excuses. I'm horrible right now. When I've been fantastic the first 4 or 5 years, I've talked about it. But this is where you separate the men from the boys. By the end of the year. See, I've gone 0-3 on this show before. Mm-hmm. I've gone 0-3 with the odds couple before. But you know when I did it?
Mm-hmm.
The ninth week.
Mm-hmm.
The 11th week.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you do it the first 2 weeks, it looks a whole lot worse.
Yes, it
does. You know what I mean?
Sure, it does.
It looks bad. So right now, but I don't get upset or anything. I got upset the first week. The second week, I said I had everything handicapped right. I'm staying with my system, folks.
There you go. And stay with the system. I think better days are ahead, and they're going to start this week. You've got Buffalo plus 2.5 because the Rams are traveling cross-country. You've got BYU giving up the 14 points against Troy. And an added extra here just in the last 20 minutes, 15 minutes of the show, you're picking the Indians with the minus 167. Good
stuff. I'll take the money line on that.
There you go.
That's it. 167, 167. Mm-hmm. No run line, nothing. What you could do is take the run line, which would cost you with the White Sox, and take Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to take the Indians. 167 against Giolito. That's strong, folks.
Yeah.
That's a strong against. But you know what? I'm the guy that went 0-3 last Sunday. So, you know, I'm sort of like the guy that hit the perfect Cadillac for 4 years. I always got it washed and everything. And then I got a dent in it, and now I'm not washing it because I'm letting it get dirty. I got to get the dent fixed, okay?
I hear you.
Great. I love you, man.
I love you, too. A sad day. We lost Gale Sayers today, but it's always a happy day when I get a chance to talk to my buddy, Mike North. Mike, I love you. Say goodbye to your fans.
I love you guys. I love the bar room. I'll try to do better as far as the picks, but for entertainment, I mean, you can't get any better than Gandhi and North, okay?
All right.
That's it. That's it, thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, so long, everybody.